It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here both live and in color in the studio. If you take a very close look at your radio dial, you should see both of us. And we plan to be here for the next hour. And we will be talking about all kinds of things because there's a lot of things going on. I seem to say that quite frequently. But that's because there's so much going on most of the time. I guess
there really has been lately, and it's not going to get any lighter heading into an election year. That's for sure.
And just so much going on. Of course, we'll talk about the automotive strike, among other things, and its impact and its intended, expected impact, and many, many other things. So just buckle in and get ready for the ride. And we'll continue to talk about the things we want to talk about unless you call in. And then we'll discuss whatever you want to do. So lines are open, 904-222-8255. And everybody's welcome, whether you're a regular or somebody new, to give us a little feedback or questioning or whatever it takes. We had, as I say, an interesting week. And it was almost going to be a fun one. Darn it, we didn't get Friday off.
My headline was, we almost pulled off a miracle.
That's about the truth, isn't it?
It was actually going to be a good week in September up until Friday rolled around. But the net effect of that was that it was pretty much flat. So it just took away all the good that had happened Monday through Thursday.
But we did pick up a couple points on the Dow. So it's nice to have one green number on the big screen of numbers.
Yeah, actually, there was a lot of green numbers once you started to break it down. Uh-huh. A surprising amount, really. Yep. So it wasn't all bad. It was just the headline numbers on the S&P and the Nasdaq were negative. But the Dow was up 0.1%. The S&P was down 0.2%. The Nasdaq down 0.4%. So you can't really get too worked up about a week that looks like that.
Not really.
The bad part is that the worst 2 weeks of the year, more or less, are coming up. So just buckle up because it could get worse.
Yeah, historically speaking, that's true. It doesn't mean it's always going to happen, but
But that wraps up September, and then we head into historically some of the most positive times of year, which are that last 3 months. The last quarter tends to be quite good. So if this year in particular has really, really followed the historical average of the market. Our research people overlaid the charts and they were almost identical.
It's amazing.
It's really, really weird.
My bottom line on my notes for today says, is it October yet?
Yeah. And if it continues that trend from October to the end of December, it looks like a really nice run up. So we'll see what happens, but if it continues along the current path, you might be pleasantly surprised.
Yep.
Despite the weakness in the market, there were some really bright spots. Value stocks were actually up this week. One ETF called DVY, it's a dividend ETF, it was up 1.2%. And then on the flip side, QQQ, which is more of a growth-oriented ETF, it was down 0.5%. So that's a reverse of the trend that we've seen for most of this year, where growth has been in favor, value out of favor. So that was kind of nice to see a little bit of reward go to dividend stocks this week. Within the S&P, there were actually some sectors that did really well. Utilities in particular, which has been sort of out of favor recently, it was up 2.9%. Consumer discretionary was up 1.75%, and financials were up 1.5%. Actually, when you broke it down, 7 of the 10 sectors in the S&P were actually up this week, despite the decline in the index.
The index was down.
That doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
But one major problem, technology is a huge portion of the S&P 500, as it should be. It's been where all the growth has been coming from. It fell 2.26%, so that's what really dragged down. So if you were invested in anything but technology, chances are you might have made some money this week.
Yeah, even precious metals did okay.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Start with international, though. International stocks did quite well this week. Brazil was a big winner, gained 5.5%. Canada was up 3.7%. Australia, Japan, and the UK were all up more than 2%. This is not going to shock anyone, but Hong Kong was again the worst performer. It was a decline of 1.3%. China actually managed to see a small gain of 0.4%, but it was still on the lower side of all the other ones that I looked at. Emerging markets were up over 1%, while the all world, except the U.S. ETF, VXUS, it was up 1.6%. So a good week to be a international investor. Commodities, as you mentioned, also had a strong week. The index was up 1.9%. It was driven mostly by oil, as usual, which was up 3.8% to end the week over $91 a barrel.
That Ouch. Is a problem.
It is. Gold, silver, and agricultural commodities were, and even natural gas was up during the week. So that's something I haven't said in quite a while.
No. Now, Australia is impacting that, apparently, for some reason I'm not well aware of.
Okay.
It might go a little higher.
With the rate on the 10-year Treasury rising from 4.27% to 4.34% during the week, bonds dropped in price yet again. The overall market was down just under 0.3%, while long Treasuries were down 1.4%. If the long Treasury trend continues, this will be the third year in a row where TLT, the long Treasury ETF, declines, which is somewhat of a
That's
record.
That's unheard of.
Yeah, it's very unusual. There was a ton of economic data released this week, and it was all pretty good. Not all, but mostly pretty good. Yeah. CPI came out and it actually looked pretty bad with a headline increase of 0.6%. Mm-hmm. But before you get too worried about that, you have to factor in that gas price. The price of gas surged by 10%, and that had a huge effect on the number. The core CPI rose only 0.3% month over month. That takes out the price of gas, amongst other things. And so that number came in more like a 3.4% annualized, and that wasn't too bad. Analysts were expecting 0.2 and came in 0.3, so pretty close to what they thought it would be. Retail sales also came in higher than expected, and the price of gas affected that as well. If there were, you know, it's almost like if there were just a solution for high gas prices.
There is.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The report showed an increase of 0.6% versus an expectation of 0.2, so significantly higher than what they thought. Spending at gas stations, though, accounted for an increase of 5.2% in August. And if you exclude that, the increase was just a 0.2% gain. 9 of the 13 sectors in the report were higher month over month, which is a huge increase from last year when more sectors were shrinking rather than growing. In fact, if you look at all the times that report was as bad as it was last year, they've all come during recessions. So, yeah, it's almost like part of the economy was in a recession last year, but other parts weren't. And that's kind of what we've been saying for the last year.
It is. That's why it's so hard to figure out. Some of the retail sales numbers were back down a bit, too, for the prior 2 months. So, essentially, people are about keeping up with inflation and their spending habits, but I don't see it expanding very much.
I can't see how. There might be a way, but I'm not seeing it right now.
Look at the credit card debt. You'll see how they're accumulating debt like crazy.
No doubt.
All right, much more after a short break where we can pay some bills, so don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I had a little something I wanted to bring up before I do the trivia question, because it relates directly to the market. This is from our favorite gurus of all things that are, shall we say, statistically oriented or whatever. The worst 4 times to buy equities over the last 40 years were September of 87. Remember the crash of 87, a lot of you. March of 2000, which was right before the dot-com peak. October 07, right before the financial crisis hit, and February 2020, before the COVID crash. Since each of those 4 times, stocks have still returned at least 6.6% on an annualized basis and have outperformed bonds over all 4 spans. Yeah, you think it's going to kind of ruin everything forever when you get one of those dates like September of 87. But no, just have a little patience. It'll come back. They always do. All right, so we have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. What percentage of auto workers have unions lost since 1983? The reduction in percentage of auto workers that unions represent now. And it's a number between 0 and 100. So there's your range, people. Call us, 222-8255. All right, anything else you want to wrap up on the market?
No, that was actually my entire market wrap. Just really good timing.
Perfect timing. As I said, is it October yet?
I did want to mention you brought up credit card debt, and
yes,
one of the articles I brought in today actually addresses that. It says that the average American household now has $10,170 in credit card debt, and the highest balances are in Hawaii, Alaska, California, New Jersey, and Maryland, which Alaska is kind of an outlier there, but in Hawaii, California, New Jersey, probably some of the highest cost of living places in the U.S., so that would make more sense. Alaska, that one that seems odd.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe it has something to do with the cost of living in those places. But what does scare me is that interest rates have really escalated on credit cards. People are now also facing, right about now, I think, the revisiting of actually having to make payments on student debt.
Yes, it's happening very soon, if maybe next month. I'm not exactly sure, but it's very soon. So
can you see somebody putting their student loan payment on a credit card?
Well, you can't. I don't think you can pay them directly, but I'm sure there are ways around that.
It's like those commercials with the orange money and the green money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really can't tell $1 from another. Sarah and I always laugh about this thing. From years and years ago, we took out a credit line on our house, and the bank made us promise that we wouldn't use the credit line to pay the mortgage.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, they'll know. Because those orange dollars will jump over into the green dollar pile and they'll stick out like a sore thumb, right?
Yeah. A lot of people do think about money that way, though, with each dollar being the actual dollar that you, like, oh, I can't pay that from here because that's the account that I use for this.
Yeah. Well, bankers have some funny rules anyway and always have. One of them that I always liked was, would you like anyone else to be able to deposit to this account?
Yes.
Yes.
Anyone.
Strongly encouraged by everyone.
Yeah. The credit card interest rates are now at 28% in many cases. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
Boy.
That's brutal.
All right. Let's talk about Michael Moore.
Why?
Because he got rich and famous on a movie called Roger and Me.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yep.
Roger Smith was the chairman of General Motors at the time, and I remember when it happened like it was yesterday. He said, in front of a lot of people back then, he said, General Motors doesn't make cars. General Motors makes money. And I remember turning to Sarah immediately saying, oh, they are in big trouble. They don't even understand their own mission statement now.
Mm-hmm.
They make vehicles for which people pay money, hopefully more than it costs them to make the vehicle. But their focus had gone so awry, and I think the entire automobile industry in this country has been run horribly since, which leads us directly to the topic of the week. The UAW, we brought this up a week or two ago, that the UAW authorization to strike had been passed 97%. When you have a union that is 97% willing to strike, guess what?
You have a problem.
You're going to have a strike.
Yeah.
There is not enough money in the business to give the union what they want. This is a problem. You have an irresistible force out there and an immovable object. One's going to give, and it's going to be the object. And I did a little research. What is the average U.S. auto worker's wage right now? Well, most of them make between $28 and $33 an hour. It can be down to $17, but that's been building up over time too. And this goes back to negotiations over the past 20 years or so, where they actually did not have a cost of living increase anymore because they got bumped up in those earlier contracts. Well, now they want one, of course. So I started with, I just rounded it off to $30 an hour to make it easy to work with anyway. So they want, their first thing is a 40% increase, and this is a four-year proposal we're talking about now. So 40% of that would make it $42 an hour by the end of the contract. Adding in a modest cost of living increase, I only used 3%, and I'm not sure how long that would be accurate in any way, shape, or form. But assuming a 3% cost of living in each of those years, now the rate is 47.27. So at a 40-hour week, gross pay on average would be $1,891 a week for an auto worker. Now, keeping that same weekly earnings number, but only working 32 hours to get it, which is also one of their demands, that increases it once again. That's another $20 an hour total with that. And in other words, what they're asking for right now is over 4 years, a 97% increase in pay. Now, I don't know how many people are too familiar with the cost structure of an industry like that, but labor is huge.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be one of the, if not the major expense category, it'll be up there.
Yeah. So if they give that away, I'll just shoot out a number here. Let's say 30% of the cost of a car is labor, and that goes up 100%. Well, that's going to make a gigantic impact on what the company cost is. It's going to come from one of two places. It will either come from decreased profits, or it will have to come from increased prices. Anybody want to bet where it's going to happen?
I have a guess.
I bet you do. Now, what are they willing to do? That's anybody's guess. But their proposals, I've seen the proposals that went back to the union, and they're very substantial, but they're not crazy. The union is holding out for crazy. What will happen, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I really don't know.
Well, the 32 hours a week thing, that one, you can probably forget about that. Why would they cave on that? It makes no sense.
It doesn't. And maybe that's, you know how, in fact, I've got more to do on this type of subject later on. But you know how people who itemize their deductions say, well, I always leave something for IRS to find, a little throwaway item so they don't get mad at me if they audit me. Have you heard people say that?
I've heard it, but it's a really dumb
theory. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
But maybe this is their throwaway item. Still, 40%, and I think the company's offering something like 30% or something pretty huge. But to me, the big stumbling block, the way I see it, and I haven't even talked about this yet, they want full pension again restored.
First of all, that's dumb.
It's stupid.
You should not want that.
No.
How many pensions have worked out well for the pensioner in recent years?
Find yourself a retired Eastern airline pilot and ask him.
Yes, exactly. And unless it's backed by a government with a taxing authority, pensions are not the way that you want to go.
You've got the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which will cover it. If you think they're going to cover 100% of what you're not going to get that thing goes under?
No. You get like a fraction of what you were promised.
Yeah, I haven't looked up where they're at today. I know for a long time it was about $44,000 a year, and a lot of the pilots were set for $100,000 pensions, and they really took it on the chin badly. Oh, no. That same thing can happen again. So when I start looking for the throwaway items, you think they're really willing to throw away that one too?
I would hope so. It's just not a good idea. I don't. Maybe a higher match on a 401k or a better profit sharing plan or something, but not a pension.
Yeah, they're getting some powerfully bad advice, and maybe they're getting it from themselves.
Perhaps.
So They have fools for clients. All right, much more to come right after another break, and we'll see you on the other side. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
A quick review of the trivia question. What percentage of auto workers have the unions lost since 1983? And on the phone, we have Marshall. Good morning.
Gentlemen, how are y'all?
We are fantastic. How about you?
You know, do y'all have any sense of what percentage of cars and trucks on the road today are domestic big three versus our friends from Japan and Korea who have come over here and opened their factories?
I do not. I could speculate, but that would be worth the price of admission, which is, of course, nothing. I was telling Adam right before the show, 10 or 15 years ago on the radio show, I did a trivia question about how many American auto workers there were making cars in this country, non-unionized, for foreign manufacturers. And that at that time, it was about 380,000 people. And since then, many, many more states have gone right to work because they were having trouble competing. Now, future President Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan has rescinded it. Their legislature has, something like that. Anyway, I'm hearing a little background. Have you got a window or something? Marshall?
Let me change to the speaker instead of the car.
Yeah, it was getting a little... Anyway, a lot more states are right to work.
I have an answer for you, Marshall. It's as of 2022, according to Insurify, about 54.5% of cars on the road were U.S. make.
Okay, yeah, but that can be to U.S. makers and foreign.
No,
we still got a lot of got a lot of interference.
45% were foreign, 55% were U.S.
Okay.
Okay, so my point to this is the American public is getting tired of the American car dealerships and very much getting tired of bailing those companies out, as Mr. Obama did, and now they're going to go jump back in that same well again?
What goes around comes around.
No doubt about it.
So do we all, because, I mean, I'm listening to an ad on the news about a particular local prominent dealership that I have no problems with, saying that they're not going to have a problem getting cars. And I'm sure what that means is they've been buying cars for a while to make sure they've got plenty of supply. But you just go down the street to the next dealership, you know, and the first time you buy a Honda, you'll go, why in the world was I still buying the Chevy?
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think they're tired of the dealerships. I think they're tired of paying the same price for a lower quality automobile.
Right.
Yeah, well, so I guess the point is the union is going to cut themselves off.
They always do, Marshall.
Yeah, but honestly, the newer American-made cars they've come a long way compared to their foreign counterparts, and there are a lot of benefits to it as well. Besides the obvious of buying American, you get you're keeping your money local. The cost to maintain in many cases over, especially the European counterparts, is way lower. European cars are so expensive to maintain.
Outrageous for maintenance.
Japanese, I don't think as much.
Sure.
But yeah, so there are benefits to buying American. And I do think that their more recent cars have been way better than what they were 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think from the standpoint of labor and quality and convenience and all those things, the biggest problem we're going to face as a society from a personal transportation standpoint is the speed at which the lunatics want us to change to electric vehicles. And we're just not ready. And if you want any proof of that, just Google Jennifer Granholm makes a road trip.
Yeah. That was
oh,
funny.
Believe me, we got a, the first time I'd experienced this, we went to the College World Series, five of us in a van, and it was a hybrid. And we plugged it in when we stopped, and that plug-in lasted for almost no time the next day. You know, and I'm sitting here going, that's more trouble than it's worth. And
no kidding.
I remember this wise gentleman who once made the comment about, oh, you mean the hybrid that has two systems to go bad? An electric and a gas. You know, and, well, I'm very happy with my Honda. My father made me grow up on Chevys, and I loved them. And then I finally said, Honda, you win. I don't even go shop for them anymore. And I think there's a lot of our population that doesn't. I mean, I realize I got a friend down the street. He's got to have a BMW.
Oh, well, yeah. Well,
he can afford it, you know, so that's his choice. Me, I'm still looking around for the – like I looked around this morning and noticed, hey, it's no longer $3.33 a gallon. It's $3.69 a gallon.
And climbing fast,
you know? Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll pay attention to it. Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen, for keeping us apprised.
Well, what can you say? It's a fun job.
Yep.
Hey, do you want to take a quick shot at the trivia before you go?
No, I fortunately won some in the last month, so I would rather give it to somebody else.
Okay, okay. Fair enough.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one. Yeah, this nothing is going to go well with the design of the system that we have right now. This transition to the EV is being pushed way too hard. It's being pushed by people who don't know anything. It's the I wish this and I wish that crew. And for anybody who doesn't know, Jennifer Granholm, who is now the worst energy secretary in the history of the world.
I think that's giving a little bit too much credit to her.
Yeah, it could be. They decided they were going to show off, take a road trip with a big old electric Ford truck.
Well, but they also had a caravan of gas-powered vehicles accompanying her. I'm just saying.
Uh-huh. But they had a little trouble north of Atlanta when they stopped for a charge, and the charging stations were full, all but one. So somebody stuck their gas-powered car in that one to save the spot.
One of her staffers.
Yeah, and got caught.
And got the cops called on them.
Yeah, it was not pretty. And then, they won't tell you even the rest of the story. I don't even know if she got out of there in a gas car or not.
I don't know.
Because they won't tell you enough. There were lines at all of the charging stations. It takes hours and hours to charge one of those things. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning, folks. How are you?
Real fine. How are you?
Good. Everything going well on the beach side?
Yeah, we just wish we had one less day a week in the market, but it's hard to pick which one it would be. This week was easy. No, but
that you just damned the union folks for going to 32 hours.
Yeah, really, it's the stock market that needs to go to 32 hours.
You caught us, yeah.
Good point. What's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot. I was just going to try it to trivia.
Okay.
I believe it went down 44% in that time.
Well, you must be some kind of a mathematician or something.
No, you are.
So you knew that I wasn't going to ask it the way it's presented in the media, right? I had to change it around a little bit. But you nailed it. Can you imagine that, though? More than that?
Well, I don't know. My dad passed away when he was 89, and that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, this country is long past a need for a union. He said he grew up at a time when they turned water cannons on people in the streets and all that stuff. He said there's nothing like that anymore. You know, companies negotiate, and you know, they want good workers. They pay well for them, and the biggest beef that a lot of people got with union mind for sure is you have no say in where those union dues go.
That's a problem.
It is.
And we're trying to...
I think most of them go directly into the pockets of Democrats.
No, they do. Absolutely.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people trying to change that at various levels, but the UAW is so big and so powerful, in where they operate, they really have a lot of control. But when you think about it, 1983, 60% of the auto workers were unionized, and it's now 16%.
Isn't that incredible?
That's correct. Yeah.
If they needed to be, that number would be 60%.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, by virtue of the fact that it's fallen 44%, we don't need them anymore.
Yeah. Well, look what just happened to Yellow Freight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They drove them right out of business.
Yep. And
now overnight, there's 30,000 people.
Yeah.
Not counting the people who worked in warehouses.
Yeah.
Out of their jobs.
That's right.
It's astounding how short-sighted it is. You know, I was a Teamster employer for a long time. Been through all kinds of negotiations, and I was a consultant before that, and we negotiated with other unions, steelworkers and UAW and so on. And they were not unreasonable. They were firm. They demanded that you talk seriously. And when you got a contract, you shook hands and typed it up, and see you in 3 years. It really was not bad. The best part was, inside the operation of the factory or whatever it was, if somebody acted up and it was against the provisions of the contract, the union would back you up and tell them to knock it off. Those are the good old days. Not going to see that anymore. So. All right, we got your number and address. Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks, Leroy. Have a great one.
Take care.
44% decrease. The unionization now is largely white collar, and it's largely government.
The biggest problem to me with the union is just the fact that it's not a meritocracy. You get it's based on time and service, not production.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And time has been flying past today. You got anything you want to slip in here, or should I just hit my stack?
The only other thing I wanted to mention is that if you feel like you have less money, even though you've gotten a raise recently, it's because you have less money, even though you've gotten a raise recently.
The spending power.
The incomes have fallen now for a third straight year due to inflation. Medium household income is $74,580 in 2022, and that's down 2.3% from 2021. That's on an inflation-adjusted basis.
Yeah, and you're not likely to be seeing any kind of a big raise anytime soon.
No, labor conditions are actually weakening right now, so the days of big raises are probably gone for a little bit. Yeah, it's not going to—I don't think that's going to save us right now. The only hope we have is for inflation to come down. And the way that gas prices are going, I'm getting a little less confident in that.
Yeah, you and me. This has thrown a wrench in the works of the Federal Reserve. Inflation has ticked up a couple of months. It's supposed to tick down for those 2 months. Mm-hmm. It ticked up a little bit.
The overall trend is still down, but the last couple of months have been the wrong direction.
But if you want to look for one piece of better news in there, look at the producer price index.
Mm-hmm.
That is already under 2%. If there's one thing that can keep the Fed from raising rates, it'll be the PPE, producer price index. Things at the wholesale level are much more affected by changes in commodities, and commodities have been falling. That's the potential good news. Now, the Fed uses something called PCE, personal consumption expenditures, which is their own version of a consumer price index. I don't know how it's going to be affected by the wholesale numbers. I can't say yet. So I'm still on the fence. You've seen the market's pricing in, or at least was till this week, something like a 97% chance that the Fed holds.
Right.
Next week.
And then in November, about a 40% chance of an increase, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The PPI is still below 2, but it shocked to the upside, coming in at 0.7 versus 0.4 expected. It's still at up 1.6 from a year ago, that was a much higher print than what
was
expected.
If you look at that, the actual numbers that came in for August, they were all shocked to the high side.
Yeah.
And not all of that is gasoline at the pump.
A good a good percentage of it.
It is a lot of, yes. Adam sort of facetiously mentioned to me during one of the breaks, said, gee, if, or maybe it wasn't even
on air. It was on air, yeah.
Okay. Gee, if there were only a cure for that, you know, what does it take?
It would take a Republican getting in power to do it, because the Democrats are not going to let up on the green energy thing.
Not going to do it.
It's not going to happen. So that is the way that gas prices come down. And if that happens, or if it even looks like that happens, sell your energy stocks.
No kidding.
It's going to get bad.
Plummet.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time you heard the term Bidenomics?
So I know they rolled out a big campaign with it this summer.
Yeah. Before that, I don't know how much before, was it, I think a couple of months before, Biden was talking, probably lying because his lips were moving.
I don't know if it's lying or just not realizing what
making
he's saying.
No sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said that one of his people had called it Bidenomics, and he said, I don't have any idea what that is.
That seems about right.
I am not making this up. He didn't know what his own economic plan, if I might.
I mean, does that shock anyone, really?
Shouldn't. Well, now, of course, he's going everywhere touting the Bidenomics. Let's see. Here's a couple little things that we might want to consider. The last time Americans saw a drop in household income as large as the one we had last year, Barack Obama was president. And it was in his third year.
Hmm.
How about that? So there's something, some kind of a correlation there, I think. The Census Bureau released calculations on the median income. And as you said, it fell by 2.3%. And that's all that, by the way, we're talking about all these things before taxes. Household income, when you take up taxes paid and so on, fell 8.8%. So that money you've got in your pocket, is that the green money or the orange money? I can't remember which one it is.
I don't remember.
Ones you can spend. That makes the, quote, Bidenomics numbers way, way, way worse. Last year, childhood poverty more than doubled. How about that one? Is that a record I would be happy with? No. Why did it happen? Well, because a lot of the COVID money dried up and wasn't repeated. So people are not making that kind of money. They weren't earning it before, but they're not making it anymore. And who's suffering? It's the children that Nancy Pelosi always worries so much about. But it's true on the other end of the spectrum, too. If you're living off Social Security, what do we get, 8.6 or something like that?
Mm-hmm, something like that.
And they're estimating now 3.2, and that's for it's for the fiscal year that's ending on the 30th of September, but it always starts being paid in January. That is going to do absolutely nothing to help anybody. The worst thing about the way they handle the cost of living with Social Security, worse two things. One is the taxation. And one is that when they figure the cost of living, they don't figure in taxation. Think about your total income and think about how much you spend that's deductible. Not much. There's very few things that are deductible to people anymore. Think about the things you buy, the necessities especially. Those aren't the things that have been going up 16.7% since he was installed in office. Those things are up 20, 30, 40%. You're trying to keep up by getting an 8% pre-tax raise in Social Security followed by another 3.2%. You are sucking wind big time in lifestyle. And that has to be addressed somewhere. And it won't be because nobody wants to touch it. Social Security is in deep, deep trouble. And there is no one willing to change it. And how bad is it? It is so bad that Ron DeSantis wants to fix that. He wants to address the entitlement programs, and that's entitlement with a small e, meaning it's an insurance program that people pay into, not something you get just by being born. He wants to address that because the country is going broke, the system is going broke, And by about 2032, everybody's going to be making less money. He can't address it because Donald Trump, who is on the warpath against DeSantis, accuses him of wanting people to work harder and make less money. Mm-hmm. It is the third rail of politics, electrifying the entire discussion. It's been that way since I can remember. I think it was in 83 when Reagan actually changed Social Security that took my generation longer to get to full retirement. Mm-hmm. He gave us something like 3 decades to prepare for it. And by the time it came, A, we were all living longer, and 2, we knew about it, so we planned for it. That's all fine. You can't get 3 decades of relief between 2023 and 2032. We're down to 9 years, and it's obviously going to be down to 8 years, and it's apparently going to be down lower and lower and lower than that. What are we going to have to do to keep Social Security running?
You can't talk about it, so I don't know.
Well, you can tax the rich all you want. They don't have enough money to bail it out. Mm-hmm. Something's got to give. What is that something? That something is we have to change the age for full retirement. Just like helped last time, it'll help this time. But we can't do it because the old people, and one thing about us old people, every politician knows this, we vote.
Well, yeah, and y'all like things the way they are.
We do. We like our benefits. We like everything about it.
Yeah, but we'd rather have the thing more. Is, raising the retirement age doesn't affect old people.
No.
At all.
If you're 55 or older today, this would have absolutely no effect
right,
on you.
Right. So what, it just doesn't make sense. I don't understand why people don't want to address this. It needs to be addressed.
It is probably the
number one problem facing the country today, and we can't even talk about it.
I think a lot of people do want to talk about it. They just know they're going to get unelected.
Oh, absolutely. And Donald Trump doing what he's doing
is
the problem.
Yes, he's so wrong about that.
But why does that work in politics? This is why I hate politics, because that strategy works.
Yeah.
Because basically saying, I have no plan for this, but he's wrong for talking about it, and he's trying to take money from you, all of which are lies.
I'll save it.
I'll winning proposition it. In politics.
And we can talk till we're blue in the face, but until something changes, people willing to violate the first rule of elected officials, which is get reelected no matter what,
yep.
Until there's some people willing to stand up and say, if it costs me my job, I don't care. This is what needs to be done. It's right to do it, and I'm going to be the one to lead it. Nobody will do it.
Nope.
It's very sad.